today's sponsor is Casper Mattresses. They make obsessively engineered American-made mattresses at a shockingly fair price. And now you can get $50 off any mattress by going to casper.com/untitled and using offer code untitled.
That's the name of this podcast.
Did you know that you spend a third of your life sleeping?
That's way too much time sleeping.
No, that's the right amount of time to sleep.
I guess so.
Yep, 24 hours in a day, 8 hours a day, and that math checks out. You should make sure that you're doing it on a good mattress. Casper brings two technologies together, latex foam, memory foam. You get better nights, brighter days, and they sink just the right amount, and they're good for other activities too.
Yeah, if you want to get a twin, it's $500, plus you can also get $50 off if you go to casper.com/untitled and use untitled as the checkout code.
And if you want to get the big boy, the king size, $950 minus that $50, it's $900. You're not going to beat that deal. It's a great mattress. But thanks, Casper, for supporting Still Untitled.
On with the show.
Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Hey, welcome back.
Thank you.
Welcome back
yourself.
Whoa. Yeah. Whoa, did you get desert sunglasses?
I have finally become the man with no eyes.
These are hypnotizing.
Aren't they incredible?
It's like Morpheus.
I don't have any idea what you're thinking right now.
Here's the, and this is actually in the military, I have learned this, that it's disrespectful to carry on a conversation with sunglasses
it's
on.
It's really disconcerting.
And so I ask other folks, you know, if we're having a production meeting out in the desert or something like that with Jamie and my producer, I beg them to take their glasses off because I can't get a bead on what anyone's thinking if they're wearing these.
For audio listeners.
I'm wearing a pair of mirrored, super mirrored sunglasses. Yeah, like 1970s Joe Don Baker, Billy Jack type sunglasses.
These make the mirrored sunglasses worn by Tom Cruise in, you know, let's say Top Gun, look like baby sunglasses.
They're CG.
And the thing is I have, everyone knows I'm pale. I don't like the sun and I spend an inordinate amount of time out in the sun. And because of that, I have a large collection of sunglasses.
Blue-eyed people have real problems with this.
And then these are a pair of sunglasses with the monofilament bottom. You know, they're frameless.
Yeah.
And they had broken and they had gone into a bin and I hadn't seen them for a year and a half. And I finally found them and one of the lenses was totally messed up. So I took them to the eyeglass place and I was like, can you do prescription lenses with the mirrors? And they're like, well, they're going to take a few weeks. And I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do it.
This is an investment.
This is totally an investment. And boy, was it worth it. I love these.
When you go to the
eye doctor, what's visibility like on the other side?
It's just green coated. So they're anti-reflection.
It's like the normal Ray-Ban, you know, everything's just a little bit darker, but not no color shift, right?
No. And I think it's mostly just that darker. So they're terrible indoors.
When you go to the eye doctor and they're shining the really bright light in your eye, does he ever say, man, I bet your eyes are really blue. I bet this is really uncomfortable.
No, you apparently have a sadistic eye doctor.
He's a mean, mean man.
These arrived the other day while I was gone, which is a shame because they weren't with me when I just got back from the other side of the world.
Literally. Like if we drilled a hole straight down,
we'd get somewhere in the Indian Ocean.
A few thousand miles away.
But I was on the Strait of Hormuz. I was in the amazing, very recent city of Abu Dhabi.
Wow.
Part of the United Arab Emirates.
Explain a recent city.
Well, the United Arab Emirates is a also fairly recently minted country, as it were. I mean, it existed as a bunch of separate nation states. Dubai is included. And they discovered oil in the 70s. And before that, Abu Dhabi was a fishing village on the Strait of Hormuz. It was part of the British colonies, which means that they were, you know, being totally screwed over.
Right.
And they discovered oil. They, not quite in rapid order, but they attained British independence. And a tremendous amount of wealth is there. I mean, it's heard a lot in the press that Dubai is this incredibly rich city. Abu Dhabi's right there. Very similar type of city. And
nonstop construction.
And by recent city, I mean, when I was born, this was a little desert town.
It was a place where nomadic people came and met.
Yeah. And now it's this giant metropolis full of some of the most remarkable architecture I have ever seen.
I hear you think about Dubai, cars can fly through one
and then through another and through another one.
It feels like that. Amazing. It feels a little like Blade Runner. Can I talk architecturally about it?
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, one of the things that they've been doing with their money is trying to build a genuine real metropolis, not a fake one. And they're spending tons of dough bringing radical and interesting and amazing architecture to the place. If I was an architecture student, I would absolutely be moving there because this is where they're willing to try radical things that are awesome.
Well, it happens so quickly. It's not like we're metropolis of Europe and even in America where you have cities built on top of older cities, It's all happening at once.
Well, and it's amazing to me because you're talking about these cities that are building up. Like normally when you talk about mega skyscrapers, it's someplace like Manhattan or Chicago where there's a limited amount of space to develop. And here we're talking about a place that's surrounded by infinite space almost.
Infinite space. And, you know, they're building so furiously that a not insignificant percentage, I think it's like 10 or 15% of the world's cranes are in the UAE.
Wow.
And you see them everywhere on our way to. So I was there doing a set of performances. The tourism board brought me there as part of what's called the Abu Dhabi Summer Festival. I was performing at the Dew Arena on Yaz Island, right next to Ferrari World.
Is Ferrari World like Disney World, but for Ferraris?
I believe so. I didn't get a chance to go there. Apparently, it started as the donated collection of one person who had a lot of Ferraris.
Wow.
I knew they were there because during my Friday and Saturday night performance, from the stage, I could hear constantly.
I wonder what tickets to Ferrari World cost.
$15.
Really?
Yeah.
Everybody gets a Ferrari?
I don't.
I'm there.
There's also a roller coaster, one of the world's fastest. My crew went to Ferrari World. I did not. But on the drive out to the Dew Arena every day, I passed things like a giant office building that was in the shape of effectively like a military canteen, right? Like a giant disc.
Mm-hmm. Like the old school World War I flat ones.
Yeah, just like a disc with flat sides. I passed these buildings, which we kept calling the pineapples. These two buildings in the shape of sort of cucumbers with these outer shell on them. Now, this outer shell is something you see a lot in the Middle East because you want light in your building, but you don't want direct sunlight. That's just, it's hard to chill a place when direct sunlight's shining into it. So this outer shell was sort of a lattice of triangles, except the triangles were moving ceramic louvers that when the sun was in that direction, the louvers closed. And so these louvers changed which ones were open based on the sun's path through the course of the day.
So this is one of the things that architecture aficionados have been talking about for years, where you have buildings that are smart and adapt themselves to the climate around them, whether it's weather in the Midwest of the United States, you know, tornadoes and stuff like that, or, you know, incredibly hot conditions.
Well, and one of the places at the forefront of this is the Masdar Institute, which is as far as I could see, a world-class university looking at alternative fuels, alternative energies, new industries. They're really so the sheikh that was in charge of Abu Dhabi as it was coming up, his name was Sheikh Zayed, and apparently one of his axioms was, what you can build with your two hands, no man can take away from you. And this is a real guiding axiom in Abu Dhabi and at the Masdar Institute, where they're really training. They're really building the intellectual capital of Abu Dhabi with a world-class science institute. They're building a city. It's, you know, a long 20-year plan, but they're building a completely self-sustained green city. So they have a solar farm. They're experimenting with different types of solar farms, from the passive to the active to the heating of the sodium.
The salt.
And trying different mediums to heat and stuff like that. They've oriented the buildings of the city so that they're in the direction of the prevailing winds, so you have breezeways. The buildings are close together but tall so that you can see sky, but you don't get direct sunlight down to the bottom.
Well, it's the benefit of designing a city from scratch rather than, like Norm said, building one city on the corpse of the one that came before.
Right. There's autonomous cars that drive you around.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah.
What was the experience of that like?
That was cool. There's like these little pods with four seats in them, and you go and get one. The doors open up. You get in. You push a button, and it goes, takes you to another part of the institute.
Is it a golf cart?
It's not a golf cart. It's bigger than a golf cart. I'd say in size, it was roughly equivalent. You could stand up in it. So it was like about the height of a sprinter.
Yeah.
If you cut a sprinter in half and it had four wheels and side opening doors and all glass, that's what it looks like.
Another benefit of designing a city from scratch. You can build in infrastructure.
Well, and so apparently in the infrastructure, they embedded magnets in the ground so that the cars always know where they are and stay on the path, but they also have motion detectors. So one of the women guiding me around was telling me, you can step out into the path of a car and it will stop a set distance from you. And if you move back, it'll also move with you. And it'll follow you like a dog if you can't stay on the
track. Wow.
We saw a lot of cool stuff.
Okay, so you said it was a little bit like Blade Runner. You don't mean that in a dystopian sense. You mean it feels like you're in the future sense.
It does feel like you're in your future sense, but very specifically, I'm referring to one of the aesthetics that Sid Mead draws in a lot of the paintings he did of the Blade Runner, of the city in Blade Runner. He has buildings that have a smaller footprint than their actual buildings. So you have this footprint that's about 10 feet, 15, 20 feet smaller than the actual building will be. So on the first or second floor, it juts out.
There's a building in Seattle that does that. That's just hypnotized. I kind of just like to walk around it.
Well, most of the architecture that I could see in Abu Dhabi sort of followed that track. And that ended up feeling a lot like seeing Blade Runner. I will say August is not the season to go to Abu Dhabi. It was about 105 degrees Fahrenheit with about 70% humidity.
Well, that's not
too bad.
Humidity
is the worst, though.
The humidity makes that bad.
Walk outside.
Have you ever been in a restaurant where you've got the heat lamp on and you stand up to put your coat on and you realize, I'm standing too close to the heater?
Yeah.
That's what it's like to be outdoors in Abu Dhabi right now.
So this reminds me of like summers in D.C. My reference for that is that moment when you realize that you're standing right behind the exhaust of a big city bus.
That's exactly what it's like.
Yeah.
New York hot summer that is brutal and there's no breeze.
As opposed to like Arizona where it's 120 degrees and it's 0% humidity and you start sweating and just immediately evaporates and all of your stuff is working really well.
Well, we just did two shoots in the high desert. One in Eastern Oregon where it was 99 and the other just 2 weeks ago in Mojave Desert, southwest of Edwards, and it was 105.
Yeah.
But both of those were zero humidity.
Stay in the shade, drink a lot of water, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
That humidity stuff, I mean, I was in D.C., it was 95 and 90% humidity.
Yeah.
And you just kind of wanted to die the moment you walked outside.
Mostly you just started to just laugh about it.
Yeah.
on the first night we were there, we arrived at like 11 o'clock at night, and then we had a day of doing some rehearsals. And on the first night, Julia found this place called, hold on, let me find this out. I know this is going to be thrilling to watch me research something
on my phone. Fact-checking ruins podcasts, I heard.
Does it really?
That's what everybody always says.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's see here.
Everybody meaning the people listening to podcasts. If I remember, I'll edit this out, but I probably won't remember. I'll be perfectly honest.
We are going to the resort. Khazar Al Sarab Desert Resort. Now, apparently they shot some of the new Star Wars film out here, and
really?
It's totally clear why. It's 200 kilometers south of Abu Dhabi, due south. So you're about 20 clicks from the Saudi border in a place called the Empty Quadrant, I think. It's one of the largest unbroken deserts in the world. It is amazing.
Just sand dunes?
Sand dunes. The sand dunes were so beautiful. I mean, I had never seen that real duny Middle Eastern sand. It was just incredible.
And you're driving among it, like left and right side?
Yeah, you're just road out in the middle of nowhere and
in a Ferrari.
No. Camel farms. Mm. And you're seeing, you know.
Was it to like drift over the road?
No.
Okay.
And then we got to Khazar Al Sarab Desert Resort, which is really one of the loveliest hotels I've ever seen. Again, like 10 years old.
Yeah.
Or so, I think we said, how long has it been here? And they said, more than 5 years.
It's old.
We had asked our concierge to set us up with a reservation here. And I will tell you, I am very famous in the UAE. Just everyone seems to watch Mythbusters. Mm. It was very welcoming and everyone was awesome. But clearly the concierge had called the Khazar Al Sarab Hotel and said, extra special dinner for famous guy.
Wow.
And so when we got there, instead of having lovely dinner in the air-conditioned restaurant, they had basically set us up a table in the sand at the outskirts of the hotel.
Wow.
Looking at the sunset. I mean, it was unfathomably gorgeous.
You're like Luke Skywalker watching the sunset on Tatooine.
Just gorgeous, right?
Man.
And you just, you know, all you need is a second sun, and yeah, you're on Tatooine.
If you look at the first sun long enough, you'll get the second sun.
And the dinner was beautiful. The dinner was fantastic. Middle Eastern fare, obviously, you know. It was wonderful. But at a certain point, Julia turns to me, and I've, like I said, I've had a lot of experience in heat. And she has not. And she was like, how do we survive this? And I'm like, you just have to give over to it.
Yeah. You're going to get real sweaty.
You do get sweaty, but even just sitting there, it's just sort of like, it feels unbearable until you realize, oh, I can bear this. I'm not in danger. It's just, I just got to give over.
So for me, when I come, like moving to, I've been in San Francisco for 15 years now. And the first two or three years I was here, I thought, oh man, everybody's wusses. It's cold all the time. This is nice. But it's just like having air. But then you actually go back someplace that's warm and you do it fairly regularly. So I'd say you probably don't get this effect, but there's a maybe day or two acclimatization period when you go someplace that's actually uncomfortably hot.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, I just want to sit inside and drink water all day. I'll see you.
Well, and let's be clear. Like there's a difference between living in a hot city where you work in an air conditioned office and doing what I do, which is go to a hot place and work outside all day. Mm-hmm. And really, you have to learn how to give over to the heat. It will slow you down, but it doesn't have to stop you. And as long as you're cool, as long as you're staying relatively okay about it.
And hydrated.
Do you find yourself like moving more slowly and stuff like that a little bit?
Yeah, totally.
You don't wear tight jeans.
No, I always do. Yeah, I'm an idiot that way.
Okay.
You drink lots and lots of water. Okay, but really the main question I want to know is, Norm, how did you survive a road trip with your family?
It was fantastic.
Mom,
really?
Mom and dad and two brothers.
No.
Girlfriend?
Just mom and dad and girlfriend.
Okay.
Brothers can go. Went to Calgary. Beautiful.
Drove from
really
here.
Warm.
So
drove from here.
About
went to 3,000
miles in 10 days?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, it was 3 days to Calgary and then 2 days back.
Oh, wow. 2 days back. That's
fast. 2 days back. One day to Salt Lake City from Calgary and then Salt Lake City.
You took the far eastern route.
Yeah. So it did a circle.
What route did you take up there? Five?
Five.
Oh, yeah. So you went past Shasta.
Yeah. Yeah. Redding.
Did you go to Vancouver and then turn right?
Stop 2 days in Vancouver and then just made a right and... the Canadian Rockies are beautiful.
So that means you drove through Whistler and like the Trans-Canadian Parkway or whatever that's called?
I think it's the one or something.
That's awesome. We took our guys, you guys can't see it, but one of my sons is off camera here. We took these guys to Whistler and we had a great time.
It's
in the summer.
So
summer
crazy.
Whistler
so
is amazing.
So beautiful there. And the strong American dollar. Thank you for that.
Yeah, but you realize that the strong American dollar is because of the bad Canadian management of the government. The government of Canada. I'm not a big fan of the Prime Minister of Canada right now. He's a little too conservative for my taste. And I'm not Canadian, but, you know.
And you have feelings. That's not going to stop you.
It's really interesting because you think that, you know, when we talk about Canadians, we think of them as affable people and politically leaning, a little more progressive, maybe. When I was in Alberta, Alberta's a big oil province, like Calgary. Everyone
looks
there
like
works for big oil companies,
too, right?
And they are like pissed off at Obama for vetoing
the Keystone pipeline.
Yeah, and things like that. And I was there while the.
Please don't think I'm trashing Canadians. They're most enthusiastic audiences for our stage show. I love Canada
as a site. We have even employed Canadians before. We love Canadians. You guys are okay.
Okay. They also, it's completely indifferent to our politics. They didn't even know the Republican primary was going on. I had to run out and find out.
It's not. It's like 8 months away.
Well, the first debate.
The death march started 6 weeks ago.
They're like, oh, yeah.
The Donald Trump kazoo band is going full blast.
It's so funny to, you know, go to a website like BuzzFeed or Huffington Post and get the Canada version. It's like filter.
Oh, right.
I was like, where's the headline news?
Okay, most difficult moment while traveling with your parents and your lady friend.
Yeah. Parents snoring while they sleep.
In the car?
In the car.
Oh, I was going to say, you guys didn't share a room.
Yeah, no, they're tiny people.
Holy shit.
And in the car, sleeping, snoring, it made it difficult to listen to audiobooks. That was the only problem.
Did you get like a poking stick?
I was driving, so I didn't get the.
Well, you can jab them with your selfie stick.
Yeah, no.
Take your selfie stick and be like, hey!
Yeah. The best part.
That's really the worst thing that happened?
That was the worst thing that happened.
Man, your parents are. My parents are very different people.
Yeah. Everything was very nice. Took the quadcopter up there.
Yeah.
And did some nice flying, looked up the rules, and no one cares.
Did you fly
no
with your parents?
Cares. No one.
Like, were they interested in that at all?
No, I mean, I most of the time, we just went off.
We had
our own.
More people messing up some wildfires with drones. Enough that DJI put out that email today.
Yes.
Flying within the flight path of Newark International Airport. Drone people with drones.
They're not listening to our podcast. The people who are doing this aren't listening to this.
Stop it.
Tell your friends.
Tell your friends with drones to not be idiots.
Don't be idiots.
Really? Sorry.
I mean, obviously, it's just like in the States, illegal to fly within national parks. So. Mm-hmm. In Banff, you couldn't fly.
Right.
But outside, you know, where you can still see the beautiful mountains and fly over certain lakes, perfectly fine.
The thing I've always found in the Canadian Rockies is that, like, the human brain doesn't really appreciate, can't cope with the scale of the mountains.
Yeah, I mean, you're driving right up alongside them, and it is, you think, oh, how tall can that be? And it is much taller than you think.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was fun to drive through, across Utah.
Yeah.
Back. And
well, I mean, I was astonished by Mount Shasta. When we went to Whistler, we took 101 all the way up the coast, stopped in Portland, Seattle, Vancouver, and then Whistler. And then we took 5 back, so the eastern route back. And you can see Shasta for, like, hundreds of miles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's astonishing
to me. It's the thing that my wife said when we drove through Shasta the first time was like, man, California has some amazing stuff if Shasta is not the thing that everybody comes to in California.
Right. Exactly.
Right? Yosemite is pretty rad because everybody, like, Shasta's like, oh, yeah, by the way, also up there, you can go to Mount Shasta.
You know, that was one of the things I didn't talk about the U2 flight is at one point my pilot goes, look down there over there next to that. That's Mono Lake. And over there, that's Yellowstone, not Yellowstone.
Yosemite.
That's Yosemite. And I'm like, which Yosemite? It's like that thing that looks like a little ditch over there.
Wow.
So, okay. I'm not going to say that, but we'll talk about it later. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. Like growing up on the East Coast and then coming out here and seeing what mountains out here
look
like.
Yeah.
It's you suddenly have an understanding of what geological time, the difference in geological time between the Appalachians and the Sierras.
So where did you go, Will? You also
went to visit my parents in Northern Virginia. So my wife and daughter went off about 2 weeks before I left.
Mm-hmm.
So I had 2 weeks of bachelor time in San Francisco.
How was that?
It was nice for like 3 days, and then I was kind of lonely and sad, and the dog kept laying by the door waiting for everybody to come home. And it was kind of grumpy.
It feels like such an admonition. It's like when Julia's out of town, I come home, and the dogs run right past me at the door.
Aww. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then, like, when I got there, instead of getting up in the morning and coming in to see both of us, which is what my daughter did prior to this trip, now she just goes straight to mom's side of the bed and goes, good morning, mom.
Good morning, favorite parent.
Oh, right in the heart. But we were in Northern Virginia, or actually kind of Northern Virginia east of or west of D.C., in what's this really pastoral kind of farmland. It's horse and cow and pig country mostly. And my parents have a little farm there that they bought when they retired. And it's the place we talked about, the log cabin that they found inside the farmhouse. That's where that is.
Oh,
and we spent some time with them. But I got to go to the Air and Space Museum extension while I was in D.C.
Oh.
So this is, I think of it as the new Air and Space Museum, but I think it's like 10 or 11 years old now.
Right.
It's at Dulles Airport. And like all the other Smithsonians, it's free. We were going to go down and didn't go down to the zoo and see the pandas, but the weather was not cooperative.
But you leave a donation, right? Or something like that?
There's options to leave a donation. They have a lot of stuff that you can do inside the museum that usually helps fund it. But we all leave a donation every April.
Right.
It's because they're federal. In large part, I think they're federally supported as well as by several massive trusts.
And Kickstarter.
And there's a Kickstarter. And they charge for parking. So parking was $15.
Yeah.
Which goes directly towards supporting anyway.
So it was awesome. Was it awesome?
It's amazing. Like I've been to a bunch of Air Force airplane museums. I've been to Evergreen up on the Oregon coast. I've been to the Air and Space Museum a ton. I've been to Wright-Patterson in Dayton, Ohio. I've been to someplace in Savannah, Georgia. I can't remember what that one was. I have seen a lot of airplane museums.
Yeah.
This is We've been to the Intrepid. We've shot videos on the Intrepid.
Right.
All amazing space museums, airplane museums. This, they had the biggest hangar I've ever seen, filled with three or four layers of airplanes, depending on how you count them, ranging from dawn of flight. The thing I joked with my wife was that I said, look, this is the curator's nightmare, because they still have the real Air and Space Museum downtown with the priceless artifacts.
Right.
So it's like they have, you know, the moon rocks and the Apollo 11 capsule and Gus Grissom's and John Glenn's Mercury capsules and all that kind of stuff is all down there. The original Wright brothers plane, the Spirit of St. Louis, the Bell X-1.
Amazing.
You know, the Voyager, the plane that Burt Rutan and I can't remember her name, the Scaled Composites team flew around the world in the early 90s. That stuff's all there. This is all the big stuff. So the Enola Gay, you know,
the plane that dropped Fat Man and Little Boy on.
Yeah, exactly.
Was it just Fat Man?
It was just the Hiroshima bomb, I think. Okay. I don't remember. I apologize. Then they also have a space shuttle, which we, you know. Oh, by the way. Like when they were getting
rid of them, you could have one for $20 million.
It turns out you just had to have a plan.
you just needed a way to get it there.
So they have two big rooms. One is all aircraft. They have a Concorde. They have an SR. The first thing you see when you walk in is an SR-71. And I mean,
wow.
I think flying in a U-2 is pretty cool.
But an SR-71.
Oh my God, that is the coolest airplane I've ever seen in my life.
That would be amazing.
You know, DC to LA in 1 hour and 4 minutes. That's an okay way to travel.
Yeah.
Or LA to DC rather. But
oh, right. Jesus Christ. An hour and 4 minutes.
Yeah. I had gotten off a plane 2 days before and it took 5 hours. Yeah. So I was envious.
You could go for lunch.
Oh yeah.
That's how the X-Men get around.
Are they just so high up they don't create a sonic boom that we can hear?
I think that's probably, the air is probably thin enough that, I mean, they travel at Mach 3, but I'd say probably it dissipates by the time it gets to the ground. They had Cold War aircraft, they had World War I aircraft, they had pre-World War aircraft, they had interwar aircraft, they had World War II aircraft, they had, like I said, they had a 707 and you know, just planes that are normally too big to have in that kind of museum.
In one big hangar. Wow.
And like I said, there are three layers deep. There's some that are on the floor, there's some that are hanging about 20 feet off the ground, and there's catwalks all through the place, so you can get to them at all different, so you can see them at eye level, no matter which height they're at. So it's not like you're just seeing the bottom of some of the, yeah. Like if you're like a P-41 fan, you can get up there and look it down on, you could look right into the bombardier's compartment on the Enola Gay, and it's all restored.
Insane. Speaking of this, by the way, we were watching episodes, the Matt LeBlanc BBC David Chase series. Okay. On Showtime, and it's amazing. If you haven't watched it, you should watch it. But there's a point in the third season when Matt LeBlanc says, I'm thinking of getting a drone. And his friend says, what kind of stuff do you want to do with it? And he goes, you know, drone shit. Look at the tops of birds. That is a brilliant joke.
Literally the first thing everybody does. You're like, hey, I see a bird over there.
Look at the tops of birds.
That's our Joey. But anyway, you go into the space room, which is another almost as big hangar. The centerpiece there is the Space Shuttle Discovery. There's off on the side, there's like the Close Encounters of the Third Kind model, the shooting model. Of the spaceship.
Of the ship.
It's like six feet around. It's huge.
Okay. So that's right. There were two models made. One of them I worked on at ILM briefly, I think just wiring a light or two in it, that was this big. And so that was the really close shooting.
Yeah, this one was probably 4.5 feet
across. It's one of the most beautiful models ILM ever built.
I mean, I was bummed because they had it behind glass. You couldn't take great photos and the glare was bad in there. They have tons of like spacesuits that are not, you know, Neil Armstrong spacesuit, which there's a Kickstarter going for right now
to reboot the suit.
Exactly. But there were spacesuits that had been on the moon. There was stuff that has touched the moon with moon dust on it.
Well, I've been getting back into this because we just ran the video of Ryan Nagata and his amazing Apollo replicas and his Mercury replica. He and I are working on a little project together.
Cool.
Yeah. And we've just been trading our Everything's going on.
We're good.
Yeah.
We've been trading our information as both of us being serial obsessives and having large collections of stuff. We've been trading some information back and forth. So I've been re-inculcated with a lot of the NASA hardware.
And he's the one who made that Snoopy cap.
He made this beautiful Snoopy cap. I'm so proud to have this in my collection. Yeah.
It doesn't really fit over your other headphones.
No, it doesn't.
It turns out you look a little derpy.
derpy.
But spacesuits, I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
It's $15 to park. I think if you don't want to pay for parking, you can ride the bus from Dulles or something.
I am totally going there. The Smithsonian is one of my favorite museums in the world. There was a congressman for years in the 70s who had a yearly Golden Fleece Awards of the most expensive and overpriced government projects. And he had a special award for the Smithsonian for coming in ahead of schedule and under budget.
I mean, it's an amazing, like, it's one of my favorite things about going. I mean, I have family in D.C., so I've gone, from when I was a kid, I went to D.C. every summer for multiple weeks. And just the wealth of amazing stuff you can do. It's all the entry in the museums is free.
Yeah.
So you can go into the Natural History, American History, the art museums, air and space, all of that stuff. And it's just, I mean, it's astounding. The zoo.
It is. And so it's like when you go to the National Gallery in London, when you walk in and you see Monets and Picassos, you realize that the ones you're seeing are the ones you grew up seeing in textbooks. Like they have, in many cases, the quintessential iconic example of that artist's work in their collection. And the Smithsonian, I walked into the Smithsonian the first time and was like, oh, there's the actual Spirit of St. Louis.
Right.
There's the Wright Brothers plane. Holy shit.
There's Chuck Yeager's Bell X1. Yeah. It's not the one from the Right Stuff.
No,
it's the one. like it's that stuff that's funny. I saw that as a kid. I understood what it was, but I didn't appreciate it. And you realize
they're holding on to this heritage and keeping it. In one of my fantasies, in my dotage, I'll be doing scale models for the Smithsonian.
So this is the other thing that's amazing. So when I was a kid, I went to the Paul Garber facility, which was in Maryland. It was where they restored planes and spacecraft and artifacts before they put them on display in the museum. I don't know if that's still there. I assume it is. Now they're also doing restorations in a secondary hangar off of the spaceship hangar. Mm-hmm. And you could watch the people down there working. So there were people down there like working on the planes. You could see all that stuff. It's incredible. It's like it's so amazing to see that stuff working in and in process.
Totally.
I could have spent 2 days there. We have a 2-year-old, so we spent like 3 hours and then left. The only thing that pissed me off,
The
only food concession that they have is McDonald's.
Dude.
Dude.
Pack your own lunch.
Pack your own lunch. So if you're going to go, pack your lunch. I think that's as good a place as any.
I think that is as good. Yes, I think that is.
We will see you guys next week. Thank you all for watching.
Thanks. Obviously, we'll talk more about Abu Dhabi. I have more things to tell about. And if anybody has any specific questions, go ahead and ask and address them in the next week's podcast.
And Norm has finished Seven Eves.
Yes. We got to talk part three of Seven Eves.
Right. We'll tack that on the end of next week's episode.
Oh, cool.
Okay. Right. See you guys then.
Bye, guys.
Bye.